Joe.
Hi.
So we're coming to the listener from the past this week because we're going to be watching episode 3 of series 2 of Picard, and we're recording, and look, it says on the website and at the end of the episode, so this isn't a spoiler, it's the 26th of April. And so the most recent episode of Picard is episode 8, which I haven't had time to see. And so we don't know how it ends, but you might, because we're not releasing this for a couple of weeks. So we're commenting on something that we don't know how it ends. Where are you up to in series 2?
Well, first of all, I just want to say hello from the past. It's very nice here today. I'm actually, this is a terrible thing to admit, but this is the last episode of Picard I watched of this season. This is where I stopped. Okay.
Right.
And I do want to talk about that, you know, because people might think, well, that's because I hated this episode. And I didn't. I actually think this is an above average episode of Star Trek Picard. I think I've got a bit of an issue with watching things with everybody else. And this is a thing I've come to realize with Kurtzman Trek. I thought to myself, do I not enjoy Kurtzman Trek? And actually, I quite liked Picard Series 1. I've quite liked some of Discovery. I really enjoy Lower Decks, and I still haven't watched Series 2. Mm. And I think it's just a bit of like, I quite like discovering it a little bit later on my own, you know?
Right.
And then I'll go back and I'll kind of read everybody else's opinion. But yeah, it's a bit contrary, really, isn't it? But I don't want to do this with you lot, all right? You enjoy it, and then I'll get the merits of it later on, all right?
I have said before on the podcast that with Discovery and Picard, I'm there week of and as soon as possible. And it's only just that this week has been very podcasting heavy and full of personal things that has prevented me from seeing it yet, but I am very much looking forward to it. And so because you haven't seen it, I'm going to say that I have some misgivings about the direction in which it ends up going. Okay. And there are some things that I desperately hope get addressed. Things that are kind of surfaced at the beginning of the series that are fascinating and that I'm looking forward to having addressed. And in fact, one of them comes up in this episode and I might comment on it. So it is an interesting position to be in. We're so used to talking about things that we've lived with for decades.
Yeah. What did you deny? There's a lovely sort of warm nostalgia about talking about 90s Trek. I think we're both discovering original Trek kind of fresh through this thing, because neither one of us has, you know, an intense experience with that. And this is all brand new. That's the joy of this thing, isn't it? It's like we've got 50 years of television to watch it.
Yeah. Well, more than that, really, like 55 years or something. But one of the things is that I really enjoyed Series 1 of Picard, even though I think it didn't quite get the serialization right.
I think it struggled in those middle episodes. And they're all very, like, if I try and think of them as individual episodes, any of them, those middle ones, they're very indistinct, you know? Whereas I remember the first, I remember the last two, but the rest of it's a bit of a blur. And yeah, I think as a whole, it worked. Yeah. And interestingly, when I went back and watched the first episode for a second time, I enjoyed it far more. It's weird, isn't it? Sometimes you go in with massive expectations and the episode almost like deliberately confounds them, because I think we went in expecting kind of Next Generation with a budget.
Yeah.
You know, and some decent filming techniques. And actually, it wasn't that at all.
No.
It really wasn't that. It was doing something completely different. And I think it put a lot of people off. And the other half of the audience said, well, this is like really, really fresh. We're going to go with this. Mm. And I think it took that year, because the last episode, I think I'm more fond of the last episode than you are. I thought that was one of the best Kurtzman episodes. I thought it paid it off really, really well, especially those scenes at the end with Picard and Data. They were beautiful.
I did like the last episode, but I had political issues as usual with the resolution. But there are things in the last episode that I absolutely adore. And since it's going to come up, one of them is that scene where Picard has died and little Elnor goes up to Raffi and just, you know, cries into her bosom. And it's so beautiful. And I think Elnor, like, it's weird as an Australian hearing an Australian accent on genre TV, you know, because we don't really make any television. We make Neighbours. No, I've never even heard of it. No. But
Farscape is amazing.
Yeah, it was made in Queensland. I'm not going to watch that. But it's so weird hearing that accent. And he's such a he's got one Greek parent, I think, and one Maori parent, Evan, and he's got that Australian accent. And he's so pretty in that first season, and he's played for comedy, which is such a surprising thing. He's not funny himself, but there's something about his naivety and stuff that the other characters kind of play off. And because he's a kid, not just to Picard, but to all of the other characters as well, it plays really well. So I thought I would get that tribute in because I'm going to be overcome with grief pretty early on in this episode.
I don't want to rain on your parade. But so the episode we watched in series one, the Penthe, I don't think he featured at all. And or if he did, it was very minimal. Yeah. And you were like, oh, you know, there's no Elnor in this. And I remember saying to you in that recording, who's Elnor? This is the impact this character has had on me. And I'll try not to be mean whilst he's expiring in this episode.
In episode two, he just kills the fuck out of a bunch of fascists.
That was amazing. That's the best thing he's ever done. Actually, do you know what? You're talking about episode two. I just want to say episode one and two of season two, I thought were staggeringly good. I thought episode one was probably the most confident, the most assured episode of Picard yet.
Series two, episode one.
Yeah. And, but it was almost like, okay, we know what we're doing now. We know who these characters are. We've got a fine ensemble. We've got a massive budget. We've created this kind of visually stylish new universe. And it felt like, right, we're off. Yeah. And I was so excited watching that because I was like, yeah, this is what I wanted from series one, from the off. Yeah. And then episode two here, and it went in a completely different direction. Yeah. Off to this insane Nazi version with Picard as this mad dictator.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what the hell is this? This is amazing as well. I'm like, if this season is going to keep going off in these mad directions, I'm there for it. And then this episode does something different again. And then I think this is where they settle, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think there are really good things to come in the four episodes that I've seen after this, and particularly next week, I think is very good indeed.
I could have done with maybe one more episode in the fascists. Evil alternative world because it was just so fun. Yeah. And I said to you, didn't I, that I didn't think they had used Seven of Nine effectively in Picard when we did Nepenthe, that she was my least favorite character. She was terrific in that when she was the president of Earth. And it gave Jeremy Ryan a chance to really act because she was having to pretend to be like this fascist president, but also she's Seven of Nine. It was so good, her performance.
I think she's stunningly good in this episode, actually. And she has some really lovely moments.
I agree. Well, before we head into the episode, I just want to talk about the serialized nature of Picard, because like I said, I do think this is a good episode, but I thought episodes one and two were fantastic. And this is kind of above average. And it's because there's a lot happened. There's a lot of transition in this episode, and there's a lot of plots. And do you know what? In the future, looking back on Star Trek Picard as a whole, I don't think anybody's going to look at Assimilation as an episode with a staggering identity of its own. Whereas the first episode, I think they would. And the second episode, I think they would, because they were kind of like contained pieces in their own right. And this is what happened. I don't know what's going to happen in the next rest of the season because I haven't seen it. But I'm guessing there's a bit more of this going on where there's just kind of a lot of running plots. A bit like series one, where you had the Borg cube and you had Soji's story and you had lots of things going on. And it's not a problem because that's where TV is now, in that we are telling, you know, they're all like chapters in a book rather than individual pieces in their own right. I just think, like, any Next Generation episode has an identity of its own because they were individual stories. And it's not a problem. It's just not something I like as much. Like, this isn't as memorable because it's doing a lot.
Yeah. It's a little bit like our format isn't quite suited to this sort of television. But I'll tell you where they do get it right, and that's the back half of Series 4 of Discovery, which actually manages to tell a story with a massive scale over a long period of time while producing episodes that have their own individual identity, their own arcs, and their own shape. And I think it's the first time Kurtzman Trek gets it completely right. And I don't expect Picard to ever attempt that. I think the Picard model is, you know, some episodes building up, some episodes wrapping it up, and in the meantime, a series of plots, all of which get advanced from episode to episode. And things happen in episode 4 that are definitely not elsewhere. You know, it would be a memorable episode because of certain things that happen, but I don't think that's what they're doing. Yeah.
I think people would look back and remember certain scenes in this episode. Like, there's one incredible scene at the back end of this episode between Agnes, or with Agnes and the Borg Queen, which I thought was just stunningly acted. But kind of as a piece in its own right, I don't think Assimilation is going to go down as, you know, one of the most memorable episodes of Star Trek.
But I think what people remember is Series 1, Series 2, Series 3. Like, that's how you remember Picard.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, Nathan, I don't think DS9 in its latter years was immune to this as well. In the last 10 episodes of DS9, now there are very memorable episodes, but you've got stuff like Strange Bedfellows and When It Rains, which are absolutely transitionary episodes in this vein. Which are, I could tell you, you know, loads of scenes in them that are amazing. Are they fantastic episodes in their own right? Do they have a unique identity? Not really.
They're just advancing various plots along a bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be unsatisfying because when you sit down to watch an hour of TV, you kind of do expect some kind of character arc or some kind of through line, or for it to be about a particular type of thing. But that's not always how television goes these days, I guess.
And maybe we sort of came to expect this from Star Trek because that was just the model when they brought out, you know, the length of a Bible in the 90s.
Well, you know, I actually have to say that I find this version of Star Trek more satisfying because you get to spend a longer time in a particular world, and it has the sort of scale that the movies have. And I'm hugely fond of the movies, not necessarily because they're great, but because their scope is bigger and they play out over a longer period of time. And, you know, this is a series, for instance, that's riffing on Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, of course, which is a fan favorite and for a very good reason. And I like that about this. And I think both Discovery and Picard have been able to tell bigger stories because everyone remembers what happened last week and it's affected them in a way that never happens in Star Trek The Next Generation, just about.
But I do think they're doing very different things because I think Discovery is far more invested in the individual episode.
Yeah.
And I think that far more Discovery episodes, you could say, that was, you know, the one on Saru's homeworld. That was the one with City of the Edge of Forever machine, you know, like that, you know, like that's nice. It's nice that we're having like different takes on Star Trek across these different shows.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Are we ready? So I'll count us in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're off.
Off we go.
So I have a huge complaint about series two. And that,
oh my God, you're starting with this?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Raffi and Elnor's hair are both like so bad. And like I really liked both of their hair in series one.
Fucking facetious. No,
I'm serious. It's a huge problem for me in every scene that Raffi's in, and it makes it harder for me to identify with her.
You mean her 1980s?
Yeah, Well, it's very this moment. So
was genius, wasn't it?
Q appears, clicks his finger, and ages.
Yeah,
and so clever.
Do you know what though? He was a bit vicious in that second episode, and I liked it.
Yeah.
Didn't he hit him at one point?
I think so. Yeah. So can I just also do a little bit of casting trivia here too?
Oh, please.
The man who plays Annika's husband, so the president's husband in the fascist future, is the father of the woman who plays Soji.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you can see it, actually. He's actually in some scenes at the beginning of this episode. His part hasn't ended. He's not just in the last week on Star Trek bit. Oh, there's Elnor.
He's shot. He shoots Elnor. Honestly.
No. And he's a good-looking guy, and you can see he looks like her.
I'm starting to think, Nathan, that you fancy every Asian.
No. I have no type. I have no type. And I'm thinking I'm a big fan of Pretty Little Elnor. And
do you know what I found creepy? Rios,
holy crap.
Oh, my. Well, we'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. Yeah, I've nicked that catchphrase from you now. every time he said dear to Annika, it creeps me out, you know.
He's good. I think he's really good.
Yeah, but he's kind of dispatched very quickly, isn't he?
And it's really enjoyable. What I really like this bit. So Annika does the, you know, how dare you, this is a classified operation.
Yeah,
and then he completely sees through it immediately. And then they just kill them. And it's so great because they're so horrible, like these evil fascists.
I love how adept everybody is at fighting, you know? It's such a smooth sequence when they take everybody out.
It's really
good.
Can I
make a complaint now?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to sound like a fossilized dinosaur when I say this. But all this bloody lens flare.
Oh, it looks so good, doesn't it?
I loathe lens flare. I'll tell you what. That Star Trek movie's got a lot to answer for.
But it's because there's really good practical lights in the shot and the camera's moving, and that's why you're getting lens flare. I think it's good. You know, like if the camera was all just sitting there, we'd be fine. But look, they just absolutely kill the hell out of those fucking guys.
Great.
It's awesome.
It is nice because it means the sequence wasn't for nothing because they have shot Elnor as well. So there is a consequence to all of this.
So we see them flying away from Earth, and Earth has these hexagons on the, you know, like over the atmosphere. And remember the reason it has that.
Did you see that green blood coming out of his? Oh, it's nasty.
This is really upsetting, actually, this scene. And Raffi is the one who sells it.
I think she is marvelous until after he dies. And then I have some complaints.
I think there are some good moments in her reaction to that and some good moments in the dialogue. So the Earth with the hexagons on it is. The hexagons are there because they do nothing about the climate crisis, and so they just put these things over the sky, which is poison, to kind of keep the planet habitable. And so it's just
so much happening. I want to keep interrupting you, but go on, keep going.
Yeah. So this has things to say about global heating, like in the episode, but Kurtzman Trek has something to say about it. Oh, yeah, here's Q. Here's Q. He just appears.
I think he gets to be special guest star. Smart as an older guy, Q.
Special guest star John Delancey for those 15 seconds.
I am going to agree with Jammer on one point, though. I don't think they do space battles particularly dynamically.
This is a good one.
No, I didn't think this was great. I actually thought it felt a bit, I don't know, it's the movement. It does. When I think of those sequences in Sacrifice of Angels where we're ducking in and out of ships and things like this, and it's all very dynamic.
Yeah, this is
all a bit stately.
But like there's character stuff. Like that was just Seven, like destroying a Confederation ship and doing a really great job of it. And we're happy about it because we really hate the Confederation. And then.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
The queen
crawling across the floor
with no legs.
Simultaneously creepy as fuck and hilarious funny. At the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I'm the more I watch her, the more I'm convinced that the actress playing Agnes is like the MVP of this show.
She's really terrific.
And I'm really intrigued to see where, because I know this is going somewhere, her and the Borg Queen.
Yeah. Well, look at that. Look at that. That beautiful shot.
The Borg Queen.
Yeah, with all of the tentacles like suspended in front of the.
I mean, that's like something you get from First Contact. That's a movie effect in a TV show now.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, I mean, I think this generally looks better than First Contact. Look at those lens flares. Look, and the Borg Queen has just blown up another two Federation ships.
I like how she just takes control of the ship now. Yeah, like, right, we're going back in time. I'm going to do it, you know. And the bloody nerve. They have him saying 9.1, 9.3, just like Sulu in The Voyage Home. This season is full of callbacks, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It's not the last Voyage Home callback we're going to get this season.
No.
But you know what? Sometimes I think it's nice to hang a lantern on it and be like, we know this has been done before.
We've done it before.
They should have done a callback to Future's End as well. That would have been quite fun.
Well, I think that this shares a lot of DNA with Future's End, and I think Future's End is very good, I have to say.
Yeah. Except for Sarah Silverman. She's pretty annoying.
I like Sarah Silverman, and I think she's particularly good in it.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would.
Yeah. She's a kind of horrible person, and I think that's awesome.
Here we go. Another one of my complaints is you know when they're going back in time now, they're going through the corona of the sun and all of this. I don't think this is as visually interesting as Voyage Home, you know, where they had those bizarre busts of the crew in white coming out of the sun, you know?
But
whereas they just sort of go whoosh and they're gone.
The sound is so well done. The sound. What about this very weird shot?
Where it's in slow motion
and backwards.
Reversing.
The tear crawls up Jurati's cheek and like Picard is smiling oddly. Like I think that's probably a callback to that scene.
I don't know how she's done it, you know, but Jeri Ryan just seems to get more attractive every year.
So stunning, isn't she? Just fantastic. So,
opening
credits.
Can we just talk about because friend of this podcast and all of our podcasts that we do, you and me, Stephen Alexander, seems to think that the original Star Trek Picard theme tune is the most boring thing he's ever heard in his life. And he said recently when we were talking about Picard how they basically managed to maintain the bare bones of it, but now make it as exciting as they possibly can.
Yeah, and so there was something like I want to say elegiac about the series one theme, which I think is beautiful, but I really liked it,
but it was a
go
bit
on too long.
It reminded me of that original DS9 theme in that it is a little bit, you're like, oh, okay.
And I think this is still just as beautiful, but it does some more interesting things. And I love the titles for both series as well because they're.
But are they going to change it every year?
I think
or
they
are they
have
basically
to.
Saying, do you know what? The first year wasn't that exciting, we're going to do something more exciting
because
with it.
Because this, like with the roof of the conservatory breaking and the glass appearing in series one, and then this strange representation of parallel universes and the time thing, you know, which turns into a hourglass, like all of that
with the
is.
The Borg Queen inside the glass.
All of that is clearly series two. And the stuff in series one has. you know, Romulus breaking up and all of that. So I think it will change every year.
It just has a bit, it's certainly darker and it has more bombast to it.
Yeah, I like it.
Still a great piece of music. The choir comes in.
Like, I love the choir.
It's got a bit more teeth, isn't it? Yeah. It's more exciting.
Yeah.
So yay for the new title sequence. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But, you know, this is a version, an era of Star Trek that does superb title sequences, I think. In a way that the 90s.
You compare it to 90s. I know you are. Don't you worry. I know you are. I still love Voyager going through all those nebulas.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Voyager, I'm here to defend you.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
You know, something I've come to love over time, I wasn't that keen on it to start off with because it was so different from, you know, the boring lounge ship of the Enterprise
La Sirena.
D, is this ship. Mm. And now I really love it. And I love the consoles being all holograms in front of them. Yeah. And the way he kind of turns them around, like 360. That's terrific.
Well, in a minute when Rios gives Picard control of the ship, because Picard's old and can't cope with the holograms, he just dismisses his holograms and they appear on a panel in front of Picard so that he can still cope with them. I think
Patrick
so
Stewart,
frail.
He can barely get his dialogue out anymore. His voice is going.
Yeah. But like there's something mechanical about his speech production as a result of his age, and it's really audible. I think he does a great job, but he shows so much vulnerability.
But you know what? The more
thing.
I thought, because initially I was just like, well, this is just weird. I'm so used to Picard being so authoritative, and Patrick Stewart's voice in The Next Generation was such a weapon that he used. And then I thought about it. I was like, no, it is great to have an older character who is vulnerable spearheading a TV show. Like, that's different.
I agree. And
refreshing.
It's good. I think it's a really good choice. And I think the regular cast is so great. Like, I just love these new characters so much.
I mean, they were always going to be surrounded by hot young things, weren't they? Like, you know,
but
it wasn't going to be, you know, the geriatric Next Generation crew all around him.
No, but I'd have to say that, like, Rios and Raffi are older than any of the regulars in series one of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
You know, apart from, you know, and they may be Patrick Stewart's age. I mean, how old is
Agnes
Patrick Stewart?
The youngest?
That?
I think she probably is, isn't she? Because
Elnor's the youngest. Obviously, he's a kid.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Jeri Ryan must be, what, mid-40s now?
Oh, no, because she's got to be older than me. I don't know.
Well, really? That surprises me. Oh, so here we go. Now, okay. So this is one of the big events I think people are going to remember this episode for, and that is the death of Elnor.
Oh, and he gets to do that little joke, the little I'm busy at the moment with organs. And I actually think...
No, and I like the fact that she pulls out the piece of jewelry, doesn't she, for him?
But also the line, she reads the line and it's, there's no time but now, and then she looks down at him and he's dead. And I think that's
a great moment,
astoundingly good.
Give me my butt here. I've watched enough Star Trek time travel episodes in my day to know that this ain't gonna stick, all right?
And don't know whether it's going to stick.
No, I mean, I'll tell you what, they're playing a long game because if they're having him out for nearly an entire season, okay,
probably.
Well, this is from the past.
Yeah,
hello,
yeah.
People from the future. You already know how this is going. Let's see. I don't know,
but look, I think that they sell this enough. Oh, this.
Didn't you say
boy.
You was right in the finale? Brandon Braga. Of course he's going to be back.
He's
no,
not
I'm joking.
Writing the finale.
I'm joking.
And why have they sidelined him? Like, I think they give Raffi a running plot because he's dead and give her motivation and give Michelle some serious acting moments.
It is plausible, but I find that they push the characterization a bit. And there's a scene where she criticizes Picard in a minute, and I don't buy it at all.
That's a line that I think is amazing, and I'll tell you why when we get to it. But
okay, maybe it's the performance. Then I was just like, this is a bit strong for somebody who says that she knows him very, very well. Oh, look at him. He is pretty, isn't he?
So pretty, but he's so sweet. Like, for someone who, you know, is a sort of Romulan truth ninja or whatever, who carves people up and kills bunches of people and stuff, that he's so sweet and so innocent and so funny. And the hug that he gives Seven of Nine when he first meets her in series one, and that hug I mentioned before when he's crying at Picard's death, this moment here, she's fridging him, she's putting him in the fridge, and she can't close the door. There's just a moment where she stops and kind of then has to force herself to push the door closed the rest of the way. I think that's really good.
Do you know the scene post his death that really convinced me was the one where Seven tried to make her talk about it?
Yeah.
And you have two people in a relationship and one knows the other one's going through trauma.
Yeah.
And she just kept pushing her away. And to have Seven of Nine, who, you know, usually shies away from that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was, it was awkward and it felt very real.
Yeah. I think their relationship is great. I think their relationship is really good. And look, here's Seven saying you should have let Rios kill her.
She could have ended up with Chakotay, you know, Nathan. You know, that was a potential.
So this is what I like. So there's this line here where she says, and you don't know where it's going. Raffi, I know what you're feeling. And she says, I promise you don't, because what I'm feeling right now, and you think it's a grief or something, intense grief or intense rage or intense something, and it's sharp.
No, it's your management style.
The line, disappointment in leadership, is so understated verbally, and it hits so strongly. I think it's a really well-written line. And that's the other thing that's a real pleasure here is this is still sort of cheesy science fiction genre TV dialogue, but it's generally so much better. And there's some really, really properly funny stuff, which is why you go back to the past. I just don't buy this
where she's going, oh, you two play games together and blah, blah, blah. Like, if she knew Picard, then he doesn't. Q plays the games.
No, but she's angry.
Reacts to them. Yeah, I get it.
I think
we've all been here.
But I think that this is going to pay off. This is the thing that I referred to before. I think they raise this issue of Q and Picard's relationship. I don't want to spoil upcoming episodes, but it comes up again. And it is the what is the deal with Q and Picard. And that what Raffi says is a plausible reading of what's happening. You know, that they meet every year, they do banter, people get killed, and then we go off on our next jolly adventure. So it's not an unfair thing for her to say.
Yeah, because you remember in Q Who where the Borg took out that massive slice of the ship.
Yeah, yeah, and all those people
like a bit
get
of cake
killed.
Coming out, you know.
Yeah. And you know, Q says this isn't, you know, we're not just having fun here. This is
sometimes
a real
thing.
Sometimes
you're going to get a bloody nose
if you
keep going off exploring the universe, you know. And Picard says, well, that's not going to stop me, you know.
Yeah. So I think that I hope that that goes somewhere, that assessment of Q not being malevolent, but in some way it's the Q-Picard dyad that's the problem. I want
but
that
should
to go
they,
somewhere.
Like, should they give a definitive reading on that?
No, I don't think. I think it should be a bit ambiguous, but I like it being raised, and I would like it to go to another level.
Because this is coming to a conclusion now, because we know Patrick Stewart isn't going to make any more after series three, you know, like, you know,
it'll
he's got
Star
one
Trek
in the grave already.
After that.
Yeah. So maybe they do want to bring it to a conclusion, you know.
Yeah, like if, you know,
has something to say.
Yeah. And something to say about Picard and something to say about, like, it would be interesting. Like, I don't want some explanation of the Q or, you know, they're from this planet or whatever. That's all super tedious. I don't want space reasons, but I do want some character thing. Yeah.
Like, I do think it's worth stepping back from the episode just to say that it is astonishing that this exists 20 years after the Next Generation, that Captain Picard is back as a very old man, you know, with his bold new crew. Whoever foresee this? Like 10 years ago, if I'd have said to you, well, Patrick Stewart's going to be back and we'll have Seven of Nine on his crew.
Yeah, that Jerry would come back and do Star Trek after her horrible experience.
Joe Ford, you speak absolute nonsense, you'd be saying to me.
So good.
Okay. So, what's the name of this actress playing the ball?
I can't remember. She's
bloody marvelous, yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah, look her up. You've got Google, but, you people at home.
You know
home.
What she does? Is she manages to be very, very chilling, but also a bit camp.
Yeah.
And she's got a lot of character about her, you know?
And it is an absolutely different take from the First Contact Queen, played by Alice Krieg, who is sexy and who seduces Data with physical sensation. And remember that she's sort of glistening and Giger-esque in it, but, you know, she's also in the body of a sort of sexy woman. And there's that sort of disgust.
What you're saying. Yeah. It's a bit uncomfortable, isn't it?
You know, Alien, where the alien, there's all sorts of kind of vaguely gross sexual imagery and stuff in Alien. And Giga is someone who...
Just the idea that the alien explodes out of your stomach.
But there's other stuff as well which is sort of gross and sexual, and there's sort of sticky fluids everywhere and all of that. And you get that with
a lot of allusions to like motherhood, isn't there?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So there's this kind of body horror, like something about disgust, and sex and disgust are not a million miles apart. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Trust me. Yeah.
But I don't think she's sexy. I don't think that's her primary thing. I mean, she's a beautiful woman, but she's not playing on her sexuality. She is just smart as hell, like incredibly smart. And so this episode.
There's like a cold alienness about her, but also she's just very, very funny. She's a bit eccentric. Funny.
Yeah. And she's having fun. And so she was sort of weird last episode, and it was because she was aware of the kind of break in the timeline. And she gets dialogue here saying, this is before the divergence in the timeline, so I'm much more myself. And she's funny and smart and sassy.
But then do you know what? I think the genius thing there is, and then you take Agnes, who is this very awkward, geeky, vulnerable, lovely character.
Yeah.
And like just in this episode alone, where she heads into her head, the Borg Queen's head, essentially, it's chilling as fuck. And you love Agnes, you know, and the thought of the Borg Queen exerting her influence over her, controlling her.
Now, are we talking over Rios's outfit? And his bum as he leaves that scene.
Now, excuse me, can we please have a look at the aesthetics in this scene?
Look at what Seven's wearing.
This is Battlestar Galactica. Look at the lighting. Look at the uniforms. Like, when she turns around in a minute, it could literally be an episode of Battlestar.
Yeah, we're looking in that hexagonal mirror and seeing.
Because the implant's not there,
gone,
is it?
Yeah. In fact, she is magnificent in this episode, and I'll point out the two bits where I think she really, really works.
It's the bit where the girl says to her, "Are you a superhero?" That's lovely. That bit.
Jesus, she's so funny. And this is the scene you were talking about, where Raffi and Seven, where Seven says, "If you want to talk," and Raffi says, "No, I absolutely don't."
You know, men, you know, I'm gay. I'm in a relationship with men. Men are notoriously bad about talking about their feelings.
Yeah.
And where they just talk really, really fast and you're trying to get a word in and you're trying to get them to engage with how they're feeling. And this is just so real. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So now
Picard and his experiences with the Borg.
Yes.
He's just saying no to Agnes. You are not going inside her head. Like, this is a bad idea. And I do like the fact that this plays out for a couple of scenes, because Picard isn't instantly convinced by what Agnes wants to do.
Yeah. And this is the last episode you've seen, but this is not consequence free. But she does win this episode in superb way.
The best part of this episode.
It's so good. It's a great line, isn't it?
There's more scenes between Agnes and the Borg Queen coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's going to be some of the best of the season, because in this episode is absolutely my favorite
part
of this.
There's even a musical number.
What, between the two of them?
Sort of.
I can't after seeing the Borg Queen crawling across the floor, I can't handle her singing a song.
Wait till you see it. It's so good.
Oh, is she wearing a red dress?
Agnes is, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the picture. She looks beautiful. Yeah, they always put her in these oversized smocks normally.
Well, because she's a science nerd sort of thing, and so she's becoming much sexier in these later episodes and a little bit more
I'm sorry, can I just point out, we've been watching Next Generation lately, right? Yeah, a lot of it. Look at the lighting in this scene.
Yeah.
The Next Generation.
Yeah. Love the teleport effect too, the transporter effect. It's so good.
Do you know what as well? The woman playing the Borg Queen, she's all over social media promoting this, you know. She's taking loads of selfies with all the cars.
Yeah, I know, she's loving the hell out of it. She's so excited. So it's absolutely adorable. Like, she's so happy to be
in
it.
Star Trek.
I
know. Woo!
I love it. It's absolutely so enthusiastic.
That's only topped by, what's his name? Jerry O'Donnell? Or Jerry O'Connell from Sliders, who's...
being in Star Trek.
Is in Strange New Worlds. I'll tell you what, the excitement he's got for her, but he must be a massive Star Trek nerd.
Isn't he in Star Trek?
Yeah, he's in Lower Decks.
Yeah, he's Ransom.
One of the characters in Lower Decks.
Yeah. He's Ransom.
Obviously, it's not live action, in live action Trek. He was at a convention, and oh my God, he was bursting like a spot. I'm telling you, he was so excited.
Wow, they're a Star Trek power couple. How about that? Now, I love this sequence. So we've got California Dreaming comes in here now.
Oh, what a brilliant introduction
it's
to this
so
setting.
It's so good. And
the song is a great cover as well.
Yeah, isn't it? I really, really like the cover. And it makes it seem more filmic and expensive.
Yeah.
You know, because licensing.
They've got a drone up there, haven't they? And they're doing lots of lovely shots.
But no, I mean, licensing a song for the soundtrack, I think, makes it seem more filmic. But the way this is graded as well, we emphasized in the fascist 25th century or 24th century that climate change had just been left to run rampant. Oh, look at Seven's smile in this. Look at Seven's reaction. She winks, so she kneels down in front of this little girl. Not kneels down, but bends down.
This just shows you how far she's come.
How
do you remember her
that is.
And, what's her name? Naomi Wildman. And she
this,
was kind of
look,
nice
see this,
but cold with her.
So this is played for comedy. He appears up in the air. He falls down. He hits the thing. Then we get the shot from above and he's bleeding from the head. And then we
it's
go to what would be an ad break.
It, doesn't it?
And the song stops. You know, like it's really, really good.
You know what? I think I saw, they might be on the Paramount backlog, you know. I think I saw that staircase that's in every episode.
No, it's not.
Now, I've got to say, I did like the scenes between Rios and the Doctor.
Yeah.
But it felt, at this point, it did feel a bit like filling time.
No.
In this episode. They've got good chemistry and it's all shot very well and it's perfectly entertaining, but I was like, well, what's this got to do with anything?
Okay, this is what it's got to do with anything. This world here, this version of America, is what leads to the fascist confederacy. And so,
oh yeah, that's why they're here.
No, but I mean, at the moment, the divergence hasn't happened yet. So this is
Is it
us.
Something to do with the Doctor?
No. So no, this is the version because this is the version of America that's full of gun violence and poverty and inequality. It's full of like they're burning the environment. Look at how aggressively graded everything in LA is. It looks
brown. It's already
brown.
Happened. The moment's
already
happened.
Happening. We're heading towards it now. That's what they're trying to say, that America now, and it will come up in later episodes as well, is heading towards the Confederation, that we're on a knife edge. Something will happen that either leads us to a utopia or to the Confederation. And so,
because obviously the whole point of that Nazi was it is racist. They're pushing out all.
Yep.
And that's what those scenes are all about, isn't it? It's the immigration coming in.
And so and this thing here, we just talked over the mugging, which is so superb.
Oh, that's marvelous.
Where she just kind of looks at him and then just beats the crap out of him.
You've got this fabulous female character. Yep.
And then takes
him in a
all
second.
His money, like empty his wallet.
They have a fabulously cute moment in a minute. Where Seven of Nine keeps saying, instead of saying taking a picture,
yes,
she's like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think
we're
that's
going to
the
capture
other scene.
An image.
Yeah, that's right. It's,
I buy them
the
as
other
a couple
scene, which
as well.
Is wonderful.
I wasn't sure if I would actually, but I really
They're
buy them
really,
as a couple.
It's really yeah. good.
And, well, you know, I don't like this sort of thing at all, but what a hot couple.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're stunning. I think Michelle Hurd is so incredibly great, and you know, in both series,
I really feel like they've got this ensemble right. Mm. They got this cast of characters right, and it took that first season
yep.
to get it right because
yep.
they all had to go on that journey. But now, like, especially in the second episode where they were all like, "Shit, we're in this bizarre Nazi alternative world.
Yep.
We've all got to work together. We've all got to try and get out of this." And I'm like, "Yeah, this is what I wanted to see in series one." You know, well,
in fact, episode one where it's like 2 years after series one. And their relationships have progressed in that time. And I really, really like that. You know, I was kind of thinking, how does episode two start? Are they just all on La Serena for no particular reason? And like they're coming home from that planet or something and another adventure happens. No, you know, like there's solid reasons for them to reach out to each other and they all know and trust one another. And I really like that.
You know, Nathan, you do that thing, you know, where you say a foreign word and that's the one word you put the accent on.
Yeah, you know, it's a thing. I don't want to.
It's very sexy, you know. Do it again. Say it again.
No. There's some Spanish coming up too, and I don't know Spanish. I know some Italian, but they have Spanish dialogue that's not subtitled or is subtitled as talking in Spanish. And there's one line which I think I understood.
So do you know already what the moment is that caused the divergence?
No.
So you're what, episode seven? And this they still haven't told you yet.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If it's anything like that Discovery, when I was waiting to find out what caused the burn and it was that kid screaming out for his mother,
well,
I won't be happy.
Instead of the Romulans or something.
That's right.
Instead
I wanted
something
the Romulans.
Dumber than that. So,
oh no, you'll just die now, wouldn't you? If it's the Romulans come back into the past and causing this, wouldn't you?
So this is the thing where we start to get the border between Agnes and the Queen.
Creepy.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's the Queen at the moment.
I'm going to tell you now, I think this is some of the best acting I've seen in this show.
Yeah,
she goes between the two characters.
Yes, yeah. And the two of them together. It's really good. I mean, that's why this plot gets the title.
This shot here of them in, was it Los Angeles?
Yeah.
It's going to come from Future's End, you know. It's very similar.
But you look at how everything is brown and how it just looks like the world is burning up. Like, this looks like a dystopian future.
Right.
It's two years from now, but it looks like a dystopian future. And they kind of oversell it in this scene when they look out across at the hills, which are all on fire. But that was a thing that happened.
Is that where the suspense of this going forward is then? Is like we're introducing all these characters and there's kind of a running storyline in the present or the near future. And we're waiting to see which one of these elements is the important.
They introduce an element which is a bit science fiction-y and I don't know how it ends, but when they introduce
it. What is it? Tell me. I'm not going to tell you.
Rios says, well, how does that change the future? And I kind of think, ooh, so this might just be a red herring. Because I think this scene where the two of them are convinced.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's
look at them.
So funny. And the fish out.
I mean, to be fair, this does look like an Instagram picture, the two of them next to each other.
But it is that thing where she says, strangers don't normally like me.
Oh, yeah, I love
that
line.
Interesting?
And it's true as well, isn't it?
Because
you think about Voyager when everybody was very, you know.
And she's fun and having fun. I also love
this. To be fair, though, she used to chip him off with lines like, you know, to Tom Paris and Blada Torres, there's nobody on deck five, section four that doesn't hear you having intimate relations. There was a reason why people were a bit cold towards her.
But But look at this. Oh, he's so beautiful. And this thing here where she just says, all right, off you go. You know, you reckon you can walk out of here? Go on.
Whee! No, the best bit. The best bit is where he starts telling his story.
I know.
And then halfway through, she snaps his hand back in the face.
Yeah. It's so good.
And I was going, oh, we're doing this boring old story. And I was like, there's just a version.
Yeah. Right, it was really good. But this here and next week, so they're arrested at the end of this episode, both of them, and they're taken away by ICE, by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is – and like everyone is racist towards them. And it, people use racial slurs to refer to the and they're, you know, they're basically
I just thought driving the point home because her dad's there, you know. So like, go on, we've got to get my dad out the back door. And then the man who comes in, who, you know, there's no subtlety at all in him, and he's like, why are you, you know, you foreigners? And I was like,
yeah, but it goes on. And
but
like
now, I didn't think how this is leading up to
so
that.
So he gives his name here, Chris. He's giving his name now, and they deliberately mispronounce it. They, you know, call them Pedro and things like they, you know, like they just use racial slurs because ICE is all about getting, you know, Latina people out of America, you know, and finding illegals and people who are undocumented and stuff. Yeah. And this is,
and to be fair, you know, this is absolutely making a comment on today just on, and what's happening
absolutely.
In America and in England and probably everywhere. You know.
Oh, look, Australia has its own really horrific version of this sort of thing happening as well. And but
is this around the time of the Bell riots?
I don't know.
I think that may have been in 2024. You know.
Yeah, it is in the 2020s, certainly, the Bell riots. Yeah. Just as the scene is about to get super corny,
yeah,
and she's about to say how proud she is of him.
Now, that's how you do it. You make people think, that's clever. That is clever.
And then she says, good story.
Do you know what it is, right, about Rios that makes me want to lick his ass? No, it's the fact that he is so masculine, He looks so, and yet he's very gentle and vulnerable as well.
Yeah.
He just ticks every box.
He's
it's so annoying.
Yeah, just stunning.
And he's hot in an action scene too.
Bastard. Yeah. And
we all aspire to be more like Rios.
There were six of him last season or five or whatever.
Oh, look at those fires burning on the hill.
Yeah, and so here we actually get it, you know, and she says this is, like, I think this happens in her version of history as well. But then she says, maybe the future we saw starts here. So it's not, do you know what I mean? It's not subtle. They do spell it out for us.
The fire's burning on the hill. No, that's not a very subtle visual.
No.
But it is making the point, you know?
I like the new tricorders, how they are just sort of giant iPhones, like with touch screens, like the ones in Prodigy was so great. Like, instead of the stupid ones that they had in the 90s.
You remember what I said about this, like, you know, kind of not having an identity of its own. Scene to scene, though, it is very entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think it's a good...
You know, there's a lot of skill, you know, involved in the making of this. I don't want to say it's terrible because it's really fun to watch. Yeah. Oh, I love this scene with the kids.
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it?
Do you know, I thought that there was going to be something to do with the technology, that the badge had been dropped. Oh, no, it is dropped at the end of this episode, isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't it?
No, she takes it off him and stores it in the office so that he doesn't steal stuff.
And he's taken out by the immigration police.
They're both taken out by ICE. They're both taken out by ICE leaving the thing there.
I wonder if that's going to be relevant in the future.
Yeah. Well, there's a big action sequence between Seven and Rafi rescuing him.
Nathan, can I admit something to you?
Yeah.
Can I admit something to you? Whilst he is handing out peanut cookies to children, I just so happen to have some peanut cookies right here by pure coincidence.
I was just thinking how gross that would be.
Oh, they're lovely. I'd do anything for a peanut cookie.
I actually thought he was really genuinely appreciating like peanut butter that hadn't been replicated. And then I realized he was just kind of trying to sell them to the kid.
That is bastard, Rios. He's even amazing with kids.
Yeah.
You know, so, he's a hell of a flirt as well.
Yeah.
Star Trek Rios.
Here, there is a scene coming up, and it's in. There's a line coming up in Spanish, and I think she says to him, "You better do your homework, or there's no Rick and Morty." Oh, there it is. It was in the. You'd better finish your homework, or there's no Rick and Morty.
Is that, but you know, that's a strange cultural reference because they stopped making that now, haven't they?
No, no, they're making it again.
Oh, are they still making it? Okay, and this is a couple of years in the future, right?
Yeah. The version that I had before didn't have the Spanish subtitled, but this version I'm currently watching does for some reason. So
look at this pair. I mean, the kids that these two would create would be absolutely beautiful, wouldn't they?
Yeah, so there she's taking the badge out and putting it on the front desk. And I think the last shot of the episode is us seeing the badge left behind on the front
desk. Like, honest to God, though, Nathan, think about this for a second. Go back one episode. We were in a completely different place. Like, the ground that this season is covering astonishing.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like the Borg Queen's makeup.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing. And because they haven't done the slimy thing, she looks fabulously imperious and she is so smart. She's so good.
But when she's being all amiable and smiley in those Instagram pictures in that makeup, it looks even scarier, I'm telling
it's
you.
It's wonderful. I just love her to death. She's so good.
Do you think that Patrick Stewart said, let's call time after series three? Like,
I think that they would have done it for as long as he was willing to.
Probably. Because this must be a heavy shadow, isn't it? You know,
yeah. I mean, you know, like he's not the main character. He's sort of the main character, but he's not, you know, he's just one of the characters in this episode. And, but I just kind of think, you know, I just imagine them kind of going, well, we have plans, we'll do this, we'll do that. And then they discover that Patrick Stewart would be happy to do more Star Trek and they go, fuck it, let's make up a show and put him in it. And like whatever our plans are, they can wait because we have Patrick Stewart. And that's absolutely the right decision.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's not even our main anchor to the past. He's not our only anchor to the past.
Oh, yeah. Star Trek 7.
Did you see what she said there? Well, what is it you desire? Well, legs for a star.
Yeah.
Oh, she's funny. Like, I don't think she was funny before. Like, God, do you remember the Borg Queen in Voyager? Oh, they really dropped the ball on that. She was just like a ranting villain, wasn't she?
Yeah, but here she's smart as hell. So here's Ice, and he's a patient, isn't he? That's not her father, is it? He's a patient.
Oh, I thought it was her dad.
No, I'm just assuming that he's a patient.
Being very racist.
No. Maybe he is. I missed that, but I didn't assume that she was his father. I just assumed that he was a patient because we need a patient. We need more than one patient.
So this is where we drop about. Yeah, the Watcher. So that's kind of like our anchor into the next episode isn't it? Yeah. You know?
And the next episode culminates in us finding the Watcher. I think.
What's your complaints going forward then?
I think there's one plot which involves the actor who played Soji last season. And I just wonder whether it's one too many things.
Is it just to include her?
No, there's someone else involved. I don't want to spoil it for you too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well,
so everyone else knows who else is in that thread. And I've heard about episode 8 that it's a bit like episode 7. But I thought episode 6 was very strong. I thought 5 was strong. I thought 4 was great. Like I've been on board with this, but it is getting a bit. It's starting to spin its wheels at the end, I think.
And what kind of one of my disappointments with this season is that first episode.
Look at her winning. Look at here is Agnes saying. What's the information you have?
Yeah. I've taken it from your brain. And I've locked it in a box.
But the funny line is when she tells the computer to bring up the contents of the file. I stole from the Borg Queen. Which is so great.
And do you know what? That's a justified swear.
Oh, I love swearing in modern Star Trek. You know. It makes people seem more real. And I just think it should happen. And you know,
but you can just see those geeks there getting furious.
Well, yeah,
every time,
but
it
everyone
happens,
has such
you?
Massive sticks up their ass in Star Trek: The Next Generation. Like, no one's particularly
That's why
chill.
You love it. What are you talking about?
I love it, but the fact that people speak more normally, more like actual people, is what we want. I don't want space people speech. I want people talking the way that they talk. I mean, we're still going to get space people speech. Oh, this line too. You've impressed me that the most dangerous thing you can do,
that's
not
scary,
you stole
isn't
from
it?
Me, not
yeah,
you,
yeah, 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 yeah.
you know, opposed me, but you impressed me.
I'm intrigued about you now, and I'm going to find out more.
Yeah, but also.
Oh, and look at her there, look, just hanging.
I know, it's
watching.
Incredible. Like a spider.
Sorry, just going back to what I was saying. Another complaint I have is that first episode, it presented such an enjoyable depiction of the future they've created that to have an entire season set in the past, I'm just hoping in series 3 that we're just really going to explore that future.
Yeah. I think that we have two presents, two 25th century presents. The first one, then the second one, which is the Confederation, and then the rest of it is about determining which of those happens. And so that's why we have a fun hangout episode in episode 1. Then we have the fascists in episode 2. And now it's, are we going to end up with episode 1 or 2?
I actually think they've taken one of my previous complaints about Picard and done it seriously well in season 2, and that is, you know, all the kisses to the past. Because I thought the one scene with Guinan, the way they've used Q, but made it a bit different and a bit more exciting. The things they're doing with Seven, I think there's enough fan service there, but they're doing lots of original things as well. I mean, they're doing a time travel episode
and they're doing
a season,
Future's End or Star Trek The Voyage Home 4. See, there's the badge on the table there, and
it's a very quick ending, isn't it? Very abrupt ending.
But I love the fact that the cliffhanger isn't space peril, it's real peril that people who look like Chris experience in America every day. And I think that's really, really properly good. And you know how series 1, you know, all of Kurtzman Trek is post-Trump, or, you know, Trump then post-Trump Trek, right? And I think that this is much, much, like, it's less subtle and much, much more centered on the politics, whereas we saw when we did Children of Mars and then talked about what happens in Picard series 1, where that tragedy, instead of bringing people together, which it does in Children of Mars, turns the Federation against its ideals. It becomes isolationist. It stops caring. And of course, we've got an Earth like that in Discovery at the moment too, after the burn. And so So here, I think, is the most obvious kind of post-Trump politics.
That's why I'm enjoying it so much. Talking before about how, you know, incredibly subtle Kurtzman Trek can be compared to the cartoon that Voyager is.
Yeah.
Well, that second episode of Picard was a massive cartoon.
It was great, wasn't it?
Bloody marvellous. Yeah.
So enjoyable.
I was like, this is it. This is Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Picard as the dictator. That was amazing.
Wonderful. Just tremendous.
Well, that scene where they went into the and there was all the skull of Gold Dukat and Martok and Sarek. I was like, well, there ain't nothing subtle happening here, but
and now we know that Ferengi have bones in their ears. It's canon.
Yeah. Was it Bran Agazek? That Ferengi?
I don't know, actually. I don't think they named him. We should freeze frame it on a HD version.
All I will say, though, is that a lot of the reservations I had with the first season of Picard, that it was too nasty, that it did unpleasant things to really characters that you really quite liked, I think they've redressed a lot of that in series 2.
Except they killed Elnor in this episode, and I adore
he'll be back.
Him. Yeah, I hope.
I'm sorry. You'll see. I should be telling you. I told you so. and I think they looked at that season and said, well, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? And, you know, as you say, series 2, episode 1, like, right, we'll retool it slightly.
Yeah.
and will fly. And I think they are flying.
Yeah, I do too. I'm excited to see how this ends, but I think it may end on the day that this episode that we're now recording is released, if I've done the maths correctly.
Well, maybe I'll buck the trend then and catch up.
Do it.
We'll see. Stop being so fucking contrary.
All right, so it's time for us to choose our next episode, and it's my turn.
It's time for you to choose the next episode. I'm not invested at all because I don't get to press the button this time. All set the rules.
Okay. Well, I am here on untitledstartrekproject.com/randomizer, and I have chosen two series to choose from. And it is because we're having so much fun today watching Star Trek Picard that I have chosen the two other mostly live action Star Trek series in the current iteration of Star Trek, and that is Discovery and Short Treks.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'm there for it.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think we've talked half enough about Discovery that we need to. So
it. Okay. All right. Let's
Because each season of Discovery is so different.
Yeah. Yeah, quite.
It's distinct. A different talking point wherever you fall, you know?
All right, so Star Trek Discovery and Short Treks.
You know, though, I won't know what any of these episodes are.
All right, so I think this is magic to make the sanest man go mad. Series 1, Episode 7. It's kind of not what I wanted. I was secretly hoping for something from Series 2, given that we have Anson Mount and Ethan Peck and Rebecca Romijn in that series.
I was hoping
series.
It was going to be something from Series 4 because I've not seen any of that.
It's been really good. I really, really like Season 4. I think they really got it right. But I have a big, big sentimental attachment to Series 1. As I've said before, not that many people like it, but I am wholeheartedly in favor of it. And I think that this is everyone's favorite episode, isn't it? It's the Harry Mudd time loop episode.
Hang on a second, though. Hang on, because we did the best episode potentially of Picard Series 1.
Yeah.
And now we're doing the best episode potentially of Discovery Series 1.
Well,
we've got to do a shit one eventually.
Yeah, we do, yeah. But, you know, the randomizer, I'm afraid.
The randomizer speaks. Okay, well, let's go full on Harry Mudd. I think there's some fabulous Tilly in this episode well.
It's a really, really good episode.
I seem to remember visually this one really stuck out as well. Is this the one with the party?
Yeah. And I think the party is amazingly good.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's got stuff about Ash, like Ash and Michael's relationship. It does interesting things, like Paul's character is in a very strange place at that point in the series as well. So I think it's a really good one.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. You can find us online at untitledstartrekproject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Ciceron, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 26th of April 2022 and released on the 13th of May. We'll see you next time for Star Trek Discovery, magic to make the sanest man go mad.